this very important uncertainty in all the game, that we do not know where dark matter is. The local density is relatively well known. When we go closer to the center of the galaxy, uncertainties get very big, and the basic reason is that we cannot compute this distribution because it is not an equilibrium distribution. The theory is that everything is falling to the center of the galaxy. So, as Marx predicted, in the future everything will be in one point. So the present status is not in equilibrium, so it is uncertain. And in particular, as Marco already said, maybe very important possibility is this one, that maybe the density in our galaxy is not much bigger in the galactic center than here. So maybe the density is commonest, low and constant. Okay, so let me skip what Marco already said. The new thing that I add are the data by Fermi. And so first we need to understand what this data mean. So these are the data. Maybe this data show two features. One here, a hardening of the spectrum, which is also present in the Arctic data. And maybe good.
The one, the blue one.
No, this one, okay. And maybe the second feature is here, the spectrum is going down. So the big question is if these two features are real or not, and the speaker of Fermi doesn't know. So they are working in precisely defining what are the systematic uncertainties. And probably the result will be that these two features are real. What I do is, like in this plot, I sum statistical uncertainties with systematic uncertainties, assuming that there are no correlations between different bits. And I see what the result is. I prefer more this one, thank you. Okay, so all the fits that I will show have, okay, values, blah 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 blah, doubts, and we did the best that we can do. Okay, so I start from here. Up to all these caveats, this is how dark matter can explain Fermi and Fermi as function of the mass of dark matter and trying different possible dark matter annihilation modes. So, for example, this dot means that dark matter that goes to tau tau is very good. Dark matter that goes to muon anti-muon is less good, but at this level of precision should not care. And also I have other dark matter models that I will discuss later. So anyhow, even with Fermi, the result again is that good fits are possible only if dark matter annihilates into electrons, and if the mass of dark matter is a few TeV. So even the Arctic peak is no longer there, but there is this decrease. So this is how dark matter can fit these two features present in the Fermi data. So the hardening at this energy would be the new dark matter component that starts. Details of this hardening essentially means nothing. Any new component that starts can provide this feature. The other feature is the end of the excess at around 2 TeV. So the dark matter mass must be a few TeV. The same model can explain both Panera new data and Fermi. Okay, now let me show these two plots. These are two different dark matter models. One is the 2 tau model, and the other is dark matter that goes into fermions, as I will discuss later. Anyhow, the main message is that these two possibilities are essentially the same. So whatever is the correct dark matter interpretation of all these, the energy spectrum of the excess in electrons and positrons is now fixed by data. The change of theory, the fit remains the same. So, as Marco already anticipated, we can reliably compute this inverse contour effect. Inverse contour was what? There are these new electrons and positrons. They hit on photons in the galaxy, CMB and starlight, giving them more energy. My claim now is that this effect can be robustly computed because, first, you need to know the energy spectrum of the new electrons and positrons. And now this is fixed. Second, there is astrophysics. And this inverse contour scattering is believed to be the dominant effect. Electrons can lose energy in other processes, but most of that energy should be lost this way. So even if we get wrong the density of the photons in the center of the galaxy and the energy spectrum and blah, 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 it doesn't matter, because anyhow, all the energy of these new electrons and positrons is lost in this process. Okay, so details are not important. We can compute this effect even if this density and blah, blah, blah of the photons is uncertain. And what is important is that, so here I consider one region in the sky, which is the only one where Fermi has so far given the data, just chosen just for this reason. And this black line is the prediction for this inverse Compton. On 12th of August, Fermi, by contract, must give the data. So they will have new points that will go, I hope, up to 100 GeV. No? Okay, I don't know what is the contract. And okay, we can wait. So either they see something here, or we will learn that the electrons and positrons observed by Pamela and Fermi are not due to dark matter, because dark matter predicts that electrons, this excess, must be present everywhere in the dark matter halo. So if this is not dark matter, but it is a stupid pulsar, then it will give an excess present only locally. So this effect will not be present. If this effect is some, I don't know, astrophysics generated
along the galactic plane, then inverse Compton would be lower. So this seems to be the generic model independent prediction of dark matter. Okay, we don't know exactly where dark matter is, but Fermi can look where they want. Somewhere dark matter must be. So I believe that if they give the energy spectrum up to 1 or 200 GeV, and it goes on down, 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 then we have finished. Okay, of course, you know, one could invent ways. Okay, one can also always invent excuses, but this would be a serious problem for the dark matter interpretation. Okay, so this is an interesting test that will be performed on 12th of August, plus or minus 1 month, probably plus. Okay, theory. Now everybody wants a supersymmetry in extra dimensions, but okay, essentially you will never fit these excesses with supersymmetry. So for example, some people like to explain this with a Wino with a mass 200 or 300 GeV, so something that goes up and goes down here. So if the excess is done in this way, here we should see a drop at this energy, a drop by 20-30%, which is not present in the data, so I don't know why some people insists in explaining this effect with a Wino or any other particle lighter than 1 TeV. If this dark matter predicts that the positron excess must go up in this way. You know, if Pamela has already measured some more points that today are not told, either these points go up in this way, or this is not dark matter. Okay, this is the prediction of all the good dark matter models that can fit both spectra. Okay, here I am assuming that this excess is due to just one component. If you want to explain half with dark matter and half with astrophysics, okay, it's different. Okay, so you have to invent new models, and the most interesting new model was proposed by Nimar, Kanyamed, Weiner, and others. Essentially, as you surely already know, the idea is to add, is to assume that dark matter is charged under some new vector that they call dark gauge group, because this is very nice. And if you assume that the new particle is light, you get two interesting effects. One is the Sommerfeld enhancement. The second effect is that dark matter annihilates into this new particle. It is light, so it must decay only into the light particles, which are leptons. So everything is nicely explained, and you get models where dark matter annihilates into two vectors. Each one of them goes into two leptons. So it's this kind of models, dark matter that goes into four leptons. Okay, next I discuss again a topic already discussed by Marco. Is this compatible with what today already we know about photons and neutrinos? Okay, photons are generated in these processes already discussed. There are many observations done at various length scales. So for example, Marcos has shown that we can get very strong bounds from this infrared blah, 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 but these are observations at the parsec distance where the dark matter density is very uncertain. So Okay, we get strong bounds, but we do not trust them. On the contrary, other observations done at bigger scales have smaller uncertainties. So you compute all of these, blah, blah, neutrino, Compton, everything. Okay, maybe let me just say that the one difference between my results and the one by Marco is that he neglects diffusion of electrons and positrons while I include it and it is a factor of two difference in the final results. So these are the same plots shown by Marco, except that there are all these improvements. Fermi instead of Attic, which should be an improvement, right? Okay. And furthermore, also the Pamala region is slightly different because now that we have data from Fermi about the absolute flux of electrons, it can be fitted from data. Previously, when there was only Pamela, you cannot get the absolute flux. No, you only have the ratio. You had to assume some theory about the background. Okay, so there are now various minor modifications that explain why this line can be slightly different from what's shown by Marco. Anyhow, so this is one model, dark matter that goes into two muons. I have to assume one profile of dark matter. Here I choose the most famous profile. Green region, Pamela. Red, Pamela plus Fermi. All the rest are bounds. So this model is excluded by 1, 2, 3 different constraints. And the similar conclusions hold for other dark matter models. For example, that dark matter that goes into tau, which was the best from the point of view of Fermi, is the worst from the point of view of photon constraints because tau decays into pi zero, which makes a lot of photons. So this is excluded by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different constraints. Okay, so what next? The only possibility to have a dark matter interpretation like this one, compatible with all observations, is assuming that the dark matter profile is not the famous NFW, but is the commonest isothermal, which essentially amounts to assume that the dark matter density is not enhanced close to the galactic center. If this is true, the signals are still compatible with all the bounds. And this inverse Compton bound never is today the dominant bound, but it remains at some reasonable distance, independent of the dark matter profile, because, as I said previously, this effect can be computed reliably independently of all astrophysics and blah, blah, blah. When new data will come, this something will happen. Okay, these new models that I discussed previously are slightly better from the point of view of compatibility with photon bounds, essentially because the energy in the process is no longer the mass of dark matter, but is the mass of the new vector. So the QED radiation gets reduced by Ragli, this factor. It's just a logarithm. So not much, but for example, it is enough to make this inasto profile that is favored by embodied simulations compatible compatible with with all the bounds. Six muons.
So ortho Grimponian state. It can go, only go to the 3 meters, which would give you 6 meters rather than 4 meters.
Sorry, this is, sorry, it would be dark matter that goes into vector goes into
Right, because at low energies, you can imagine the annihilation can proceed to the bar state, right? And if it's a vector, if it's a spin one bar state, it cannot go to 3 mediators, it can only go to 3 or the vector and the Higgs, and that typically gives, it can very easily give 6 vectors rather than 4.
I'm sorry, but hey, I don't understand. Maybe.
Well, if you have a U plus and minus annihilating 3/4 of the time, it gives 3/4.
So the matter, next word, this is the matter. Right. Tell me. So?
It emits a vector.
A vector. Two vectors.
No. It emits one vector. One vector. Soft vector. And gets into the bound state.
What does it mean, soft? This vector?
On the order of the bound, of the binding energy of this system.
Like
imagine E plus E minus recombining into a positron with the initial vector.
The next thing?
And okay. then next thing you have a Grimponian state that can be spin total spin one, in which case, and it's 3/4 of the time.
Okay, but how do I get the 6 muons?
Because the spin one state cannot go to two mediators, it can only go to 3.
Okay, so you get
6 meters.
Okay, so okay.
I just was asking whether it would push why six
is 3 here?
3 mediators. Each of them give a pair.
Eh?
If each of these mediators give
so you have 2 vectors. Sorry, anyhow, no. So even if I don't understand, then
I think the question was simply about the final state.
From the point of view of now, okay, so even if I don't understand the question, I can answer it. Okay, now, so from the point of view of photons, what matters is the energy in this vertex. The invariant energy in this vertex. If it is low, like the mass of the light vector, then you get the low flux of photons. If it is high, like the mass of dark matter, then you get more photons.
Presumably, it will soften the electron spectrum.
Yeah,
so that will bring down the XGS and the strength.
Less dangerous because neutrino will be less energetic. I was simply saying that in these models with dark photons, right, if you allow for the recombination process, so 3/4 of the time you have 3 vectors in the final state out of the ortho Grimponian annihilation, which goes to 6 electrons.
Okay, yes. So this should be similar to this case, but with 6 instead of 4. Okay. Okay, so now what is the lesson from all of this? Is that even so, these bands are typically stronger, especially.
So, in any case, it seems that dark matter profile smoother than what's suggested by n-body simulations is needed. So maybe one can think about something different, which is the idea that dark matter maybe does not annihilate but decays. And the big change that you have to do is to take your code for dark matter annihilations, replace 2 everywhere with 1, and write a new paper. The reason for this is that the rate of dark matter annihilations is proportional to the square of the dark matter density, because 2 dark matters must meet. If instead it is decay, it is just the density of dark matter. So even if the density grows close to the galactic center, its square grows a lot, while rho not a lot. So going from dark matter annihilations to dark matter decays in some sense, it's like telling that what happens close to the galactic center is less important, which is the good direction. So if you do this, here is exactly the same plot as before, except that now the parameter is no longer the cross-section, but is the lifetime. So even if I take the worst of the worst, tau, that gives a lot of photons, NFW, which is very steep, with decay, the signal is compatible with all the bounds. So, from some point of view, this interpretation, you don't have to invent any Sommerfeld enhancement, any density profile, isothermal. Furthermore, I have not said that cosmology also puts significant bounds on dark matter annihilations, because in the early universe, the density of dark matter was larger, so the annihilation rate was larger squared. All these problems disappear if you consider dark matter annihilations. So again, you can make similar plots. Which dark matter decay channels give best fits to the data? And again, tau is good. And now here we can, you can consider also fermionic dark matter that gives a W and the tau. So maybe, how much time do I have? I can... okay, so maybe I can conclude with some theory, possible theory of dark matter decays, starting from this numerological observation, which maybe is interesting. So let us assume that dark matter is not we believe what we believe it is, but it is instead some particle like the proton, which means something which is present today, not because it has a freeze-out density, but because it has an asymmetry, like the proton. And in particular, we assume that it is very similar to the proton, that this asymmetry is kept in thermal equilibrium by the same sphagnons that do the job for the proton. So, data tell that the ratio of dark matter density to baryon density is around 1.5. Which values of the dark matter mass naturally reproduce this 5? The trivial answer is that dark matter is 5 times heavier than the proton. They have similar asymmetries equilibrated by sphagnons, so 5, dark matter with 5 GeV would be good for this number, but would be relevant for Pamela and Fermi. What is interesting is that there is a second solution. If dark matter is very heavy, QTV, as suggested by Fermi, okay, then this ratio between masses is very big, but it is compensated by this factor, which essentially is a Boltzmann suppression. So the physics of this equation is what? This is a Boltzmann thermal equilibrium at temperature T, taking into account that sphagnons disappear when SU2 gets broken. Okay, so maybe I can make a plot. So here I plot mass of dark matter, and here I plot density of dark matter over density of baryons, and this function is something like that. This function, something like this. So there are two solutions, one at 5 GeV, and the other at something like few TeV. Which is just the mass scale independently suggested by Fermi. Okay, so this numerology maybe suggests that these kind of ideas are interesting. To go on, okay, you can make a model, essentially some technicolor, where dark matter, like the proton, is composed of higher fermions. Next, how can we get this crazy lifetime needed for Fermi, which is 10 to 26 seconds, which means 10 to 9 times the age of the universe? Nice answer is this one. Suppose that, like the proton, dark matter decays because there are four fermion operators due to some gut physics, whatever. So the lifetime of the proton is given by tau, gut scale to the fourth power, over proton mass to the fifth power. If you put here the mass of dark matter, QTV, this gives naturally the desired lifetime. And of course, please don't ask me what what is the meaning of gut scale in this context. The number works, so I'm happy. Okay, so now maybe this theory is interesting. If you want to get crazy, you can also start asking which should be the technicolor gauge group. So for example, SU3, like the proton, would not be good, because so the proton is made of three quarks. If the technicolor group is SU3, the composite particle has three techniquarks. Can we cancel? No. Okay. Next, you add the four fermion operator. Okay. In the case of the proton, the four fermion operators that gives its decay is three quarks and electron. So this means that the proton decays into one lepton plus one pion for conservation of energy. This would be bad, because dark matter, if made in this way, would decay into one lepton and one technipion, which is a W. This would give an excess of antiprotons not seen by Pamela. If instead the technicolor gauge group is SU2, the composite particle is made of two techniquarks. The four fermion operator again has four fermions. So dark matter will decay into two standard model fermions that could be two leptons. So, okay, this would also give a model of dark matter that can avoid decaying into antiprotons. Okay, but okay, probably not, this is too much fantasy. So, conclusions. We have no idea of what this excess is due to. If it is due to dark matter, there are the following solutions. One, pretty TeV dark matter that annihilates into tau, but only if the dark matter density is communist, the same everywhere. Solution two, again, pretty TeV dark matter that gives four muons, or maybe even six, but again, the density of dark matter, okay, now the bound is relaxed, but still is not not fully okay. Third solution, the matter that decays into mu or tau, and there is no constraint on the dark matter density. Dark matter lighter than a PV seems anyhow disfavored, because it will give a drop in the Fermi spectrum not seen by Fermi. So what next? Okay. Dark matter predicts that the positron fraction must continue to grow at higher energies, and Pamela, maybe someday, which is not today, will tell us what the data are. Second, it is important to check if an excess is present in antiprotons at higher energies, and today we got the preliminary answer. The next big thing that will happen is when Fermi will release the data about the photons. If no excess is present at around 100 GeV, okay, maybe it would be the moment to stop giving talks like this one. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
There was a conference organized in Roma, which is close to Pamela, so it was the good moment to give the data, but this didn't happen.
Your chi-square plots that you showed a couple of times for different models, how seriously should the absolute chi-square models be taken?
The absolute chi-square should be never considered seriously, and people should not teach that this is a serious quantity to take care of.
How many degrees of freedom, for example?
No. Okay, now I know course of statistics and I'll teach this. When you have many data points, it is very stupid to take care of the number of the overall chi-square. The chi-square test became an inefficient tool when you had many data points. If you do fits of, for example.
So when I compare to when there are two different models on the same plot, you have the same chi square on the y axis, and one is shifted up 10 relative to the other.
Yes.
Is that difference real?
The meaning, okay, so the good way of doing statistics is this one.
Right.
So consider, okay, forget the overall chi square. Consider only the difference, for example, between this, and this. The difference is what? Is 10. Square root of 10 is 3, so it is like a 3 sigma difference. So the probability that the fluctuations gives a difference of 10 is blah blah blah. And next, of course, we should.
So the different models on one plot, the difference in chi square between them is meaningful.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, this is not the difference between these. This is something like 3 sigma, but of course, here. Statistics has problems that Pamela and Fermi never talk, never precisely define what are the systematic uncertainties. Now there are a lot of problems. I try to do the best that I can do, but I believe that these plots at most have a semi-quantitative meaning. So up here is bad, this is good.
So you kind of condemned Susie in the start, to be fair, I mean, if I take just, you know, Susie is such a big framework, and if I'm given the designer power to choose, you know, masses as I'm pleased, right, I can certainly cook up a model that does the enhancement of the annihilation cross section and possibly that also enhancement of annihilation to leptons and so on.
Okay.
If I'm allowed to choose my masses, you know, at the weak scale.
I put a paper out last week that does that.
No, okay, sorry, no, okay. Of course, no, everything can be supersymmetrized. Here with SUSY, I mean, if the new particles suggested by the minimum supersymmetry standard model, like the neutrino, are good or not. You can do everything supersymmetric, but what really gives Pavel and Fermi would not be supersymmetric, but the extra that you put there.
There could be some degeneracies, right, with in the spectrum with leptons and so on. You hit the resonance and have an enhancement.
You mean this solution, eh? No? Come on, okay.
I don't know which one in particular, but I know that you can boost the galactic annihilation by choosing parameters.
Okay, you can do something. Say, in this case, you end up, I need the boost factor due to astrophysics of a million.
No. I mean the particle physics enhancement. I can make the SUSY with the particle physics enhancement with a boost factor from astrophysics equaling to one. I can do that.
If you put the Sommerfeld effect, which is not related to supersymmetry,
the resonant enhancement that would be an accident on the scale of of
you can potentially get Sommerfeld enhancements. In supersymmetry.
Yeah. Okay. Now, but okay. Now, if now okay, the key physics is some resonance. Or Sommerfeld, who cares, you know, that everything is supersymmetrized. Okay, this was not the meaning of you know, what I tell. The key point would not be supersymmetry. You invent something else, and next you make it supersymmetric, make everybody happy. But,
I have a question about what, you know, this new model that you described, you know, 3TeV, dark matter. What would that do for people doing direct searches? For what does it do to elastic scatter experiments?
Sorry, do you mean this model by this one?
I don't know. I saw so much, but in general, can you comment on how if we were to interpret these data as a dark matter, you know, candidate? What does that do for the Earth-based experiments doing direct searches?
Okay, so one statement that you know, is true is that such a big cross section can be compatible with all the bounds from direct detection, but I do not see any strong implication or prediction.
So the interaction doesn't change. I mean, you said this, you know, there's a new mediator, etc. Does that now the dark matter interact with that mediator with? Nuclear? How does that interaction change the elastic scatter?
Okay, in specific models you can get concrete results. In general, no. So, for example, these models are interesting also from this point of view because they can also explain gamma.
Via which mechanism?
By having dark matter, which is made not of one particle, but of two particles with a mass splitting of a few hundred keV, the so-called inelastic dark matter model, which hopefully this year, maybe not on 12th of August, will be proved by new data from direct detection experiments. This is also a completely different topic that maybe this year will be clarified.
I think it's true that this is a quite a general framework, so it depends a lot on exactly what the new candidate is and kind of what the cross section is for elastic or inelastic scatterings.
But in general, you lose the in these models, you lose the connection between the WIMP annihilation cross section and the scattering. They are no longer one to one related.
That's the main point, I think.
Yeah, they're no longer related.
Even in supersymmetry, you know, there have never been one to one. There are clouds of possible values.
Here they can be different by 20 orders of magnitude, right? Depending on your mixing parameter. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so your conclusion that Fermi must see an enhancement of gammas at higher energy, how has this changed if you assume an anomalous dependence on sigma times b? On the annihilation cross, on the velocity dependence of the annihilation cross section.
I believe not much, because in our galaxy rotation curves are flat. So unless you go, unless there are, I would guess not much. No, I know that there are possible caveats to this master. This is a too strong statement.
So the one caveat that was mentioned is if we happen to be right next to a local plant.
If if we are here, yes.
Because
that
sigma
b
can just be small.
If we arrive closer, to a huge plant, yes. Yeah. But
that's the same thing like a puzzle, right? Having an open source, of course, in astrophysics or in dark matter, if you have an open source, and you can have anything you can do about
another also question. Part of the spectrum by doing that, that's important. That's an added plus.
I mean, if you are close to dark matter source, you should see that source very strongly in gamma rays. So that would be different.
Okay, so you have a different
so that would be diffuse gammas, that would be non diffuse gammas.
Right, but you should still see it.
No, as far as I know, the main caveat to this master.
What the thing is.
Okay,
maybe not.
I know. All right, I just wanted to say that lunch is over.
Okay,
right. So everyone should have some lunch.
The, just should show me.